tuned KZYX Philo 90.7 FM, KZYZ Willits and Ukiah 91.5 FM, and Fort Bragg at 88.1 FM. We also stream live at KZYX.org, Mendocino County Public Broadcasting. Good morning, I'm Christy Wagner, and this is Pivot Point. My guest today is Peggy Ayers, social critic, cultural visionary, and author of Ancient Spirit Rising, Reclaiming Your Roots and Restoring Earth Community, an award-winning book that explores strategies for intercultural competency, healing our relationships with First Nations, recovering an ecocentric worldview, and reclaiming peaceful coexistence in Earth Community. Peggy joins us via Skype from her home on a hilltop in Mississauga Ojibwe territory, also known as Peterborough, Ontario, Canada. Welcome, Peggy Ayers. I'm so happy to meet you, and thank you for joining us.
Well, it's great to be here, Christy. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Yeah. You begin chapter one with one of my favorite quotes. It's from the Delphic Oracle, "Know thyself." That's kind of the beginning of everything. But, yeah. And then on the same page, you write, "Highly esteemed Anishinaabe elder, traditional teacher, and professor, James Dumont is telling us right now that everyone needs to get back to their own IK. Would you mind explaining what IK is?
Well, IK is just a short form for Indigenous knowledge. It's like an acronym. But that's also the starting point for my whole book, why I got going with the writing of Ancient Spirit Rising, actually.
And what? Tell me about that. What were the circumstances in your life that led you to writing it? And where did the inspiration come from?
Well, exactly. I'm really lucky. I live in a part of Canada where there's a huge First Nations presence. There's three reserves from where I live within driving distance. And we have a Trent University, which has an Indigenous Studies department. I believe the only other one in North America is in Albuquerque. But a lot of Indigenous Studies departments are growing all over the place. So anyway, I'm immersed in this wonderful area and, you know, going to ceremony over the years. I have so many First Nations friends and associates and connections in that way. I lived on a First Nation reserve for a time. So at an elders conference, it must have been about 10 years ago now, time is flying, I heard James Dumont, that elder you spoke of, he had this very simple statement. And he just said, everyone must return to their own Indigenous knowledge, which he just, you know, told us. And it really struck me. It was like this lightning bolt. And I'm like, well, where is that located? You know, why don't all people have their Indigenous knowledge? And he was also making a comment on the phenomena these days of cultural appropriation, whereby non-Native people, white or white people, are kind of assuming a Native identity. They're offering services to other white people, mostly like in the New Age community, and taking on a Native name and a sort of a Native persona and offering Native rituals, even something like a sweat lodge, which is really a serious form of cultural appropriation. So this phenomena was happening in my own area too. So I just started writing about it. Why was this happening? What does it say about white identity? How can we be doing better? And the harm caused, you know, to First Nations. There are boundaries now in place that white people are finally learning about, and also that we do have our own Indigenous knowledge. So those were all the parts that I sort of wove together.
Well, you know, there is a fine line between the recentering of Indigenous values and cultural appropriation. Can you tell us the difference and how we steer clear of making those mistakes as we strengthen our own bonds to the land?
Yeah, it's just a prevalent phenomenon. And I think we've had such a lack of identity as white people in the Americas. It's been sort of called the cultural orphan syndrome. But I'll read a short passage from my book that I think really illustrates this this phenomena very well. And it shows up everywhere. It shows up in fashion and sports, in mainstream marketing, but you know, definitely I was focusing on the spiritual community, kind of like the New Age community. So in Ancient Spirit Rising, I say, as much as contemporary spiritual seekers try to deny it, those in the New Age, pagan, Druid, Wicca, Celtic Reconstruction, goddess, and nature spirituality communities who are descended from the original settler society, we do not exist outside of the rubric of white dominance. And we have been entitled through white privilege to appropriate elements of Turtle Island First Nations Indigenous knowledge, culture, and identity as a normalized and unchallenged practice. And the truth is that unless we are native to the Americas, we are interlopers to this place. And from the point of view of the oppressed, we are either an imperialist or an ally, and there's not a lot of continuum in between. So that opens up a wide range of discussion for sure. And just I talk about in the book how the whole phenomena of cultural appropriation started about 50 years ago, you know, mostly in the spiritual New Age flourishing, which was very important at the time. But the young white people didn't really have valid role models to turn to. So they found it convenient, I guess is a good word, to, you know, access the teachings and cultural property of the First Nations that they saw around them. And then it just flourished into this gigantic industry that we're kind of stuck with today. So there has been enormous blowback. Boundary lines are now in place. You know, cultural appropriation has been addressed with legal means at the highest level with the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People. So this is not just a conversation we're having about protocols. It's also a very, very serious theme of culture that can also be addressed by legal means. So, you know, it's a pretty serious problem.
Well, it really gets to the heart, I think, of problems that we're having in the United States with racism and white supremacy being pretty inherent to the whole system. I discovered Jardana Peacock on your Facebook page. You have wonderful resources on Ancient Spirit Rising Facebook page.
Right.
And Jardana Peacock wrote a book called Practice Showing Up, a guidebook for white people working for racial justice. And here's a quote from her that I think is related to what you're saying. One of the shared struggles I hear from white folks in anti-racism work is a struggle to define what white culture is and how to create a culture that eradicates the position of racism and supremacy when showing up in a white body, end quote. And I think preparing for this interview with you, I really had to look at just how the whole system of the way the consumer capitalist system is white supremacist. And, you know, the more that one comes out of denial and starts examining with all the crises that are happening where we are and where we want to go, it really does take going back and healing some stuff for white people. I mean, for those of European descent, Peggy, how would you describe the colonial pattern that affected our ancestors long before they arrived on Turtle Island?
Well, exactly. And I think that pattern has, you know, colonized everyone. It was like a top-down power hierarchy. It's been going on for about 2,000 years. People say sort of 5,000 years in some cases. Some scholars kind of go with that number. Sort of the rise of Christianity, the rise of the patriarchy. But many groups have been oppressed over those long, long centuries. And so when all the immigration and arrival came to Turtle Island of the Europeans, they carried that same colonial pattern with them. And, you know, war, displacement, and the Industrial Revolution, other traumatic factors. We carry a lot of trauma as white people, but the pattern has sort of been to set our own worldview up again. It's what we did in North America. We transformed it into Europe. We kind of brought Europe here with us.
Well, you know, another writer I found on your page that I really like is Resma Menakem. He's an American somatic therapist. And he's pointed out that, quote, during the Middle Ages in Europe, torture, mutilation, and other forms of savagery, particularly on women, were seen as normal aspects of life. Public executions were literally a spectator sport. That trauma has never been resolved, and this is a conflict that white Americans must heal in themselves, for themselves, and among themselves. We non-white Americans can support this healing if we want to, but it cannot be outsourced either to us or to anyone else. And Peggy, I really noticed looking on social media that there are a lot of people who are anti-racist, you know, of settler lineage, but the confusion over what to do about it gets directed at the people who've been oppressed by the supremacy and the racism, like, tell us what to do. And it's really something I think we need to heal in ourselves. Would you agree?
Yeah, there's a lot of different parts to that process. And I really want to say I do love that book you just mentioned, My Grandmother's Hands. It's a beautiful, beautiful book, you know, full of wonderful resources for us. But yeah, to heal that trauma, and I think there's many ways of going about it. We need to, you know, start with the psyche. There's all kinds of colonial ideas and colonial behaviors. We have to identify those within ourselves and then, you know, look for the alternatives. And what those are age-old ways of being that are pre-colonial, which means how did human beings live on this planet in a symbiosis with the natural world before these empires started to, you know, dominate the land, dominate the people, consider the natural world as resources, and the whole equal side that's going on today. So we really have to delve quite deep, and we have to look to nature. I think that's where a lot of the answers lie. It's very difficult to trace your heritage in many cases as a person of European descent. I mean, there's lots of tools out there now. Genealogy tools are incredibly popular. But again, some of those societies we don't want to identify with. They're very colonial, very brutal. And so what do we do in those cases? And we have to maybe skip a number of generations. We have to look for the beautiful pagan ways that were always kept alive throughout those long years in Europe of colonization. And they're definitely there, or we wouldn't still have those abilities within ourselves today. I mean, I know so many people that have wonderful powers of telepathy, or, you know, these magical things happen around them. And as white people, where's that coming from? It's coming from a time, a pre-colonial time, when we still lived in an indigenous society where it was animist, and we still had these magical abilities. So that primal world is still in place. It's just up to us to decolonize, you know, from a lot of these harmful worldviews, harmful beliefs we carry around, harmful habits, I would call them habits, and, you know, move back into harmony with nature. And First Nations are modeling that to us. I think there's a lot of confusion, but I think there's a good guideline. We can learn from Indigenous values, like the values of kindness, the values of, you know, considering each part of the land as alive. That's the animist worldview. But to appropriate would be to then kind of move in and work with the cultural expressions and the property of that particular First Nation. So that's where the boundary line is. But the values of First Nations, they are definitely urging us to adopt all the values we can from pre-colonial societies, including our own.
Right. You know, I have always had the feeling that the colonization of other peoples and empire had to, somewhere in the past, had to do with the colonization of Europe. The old ways of Europe, when Rome moved north, of Northern Europe, when Rome moved north and brought Christianity and a new calendar, and then with the witch burnings, where it was the old women with the knowledge that were executed. And that only ended the last legal execution of a person for witchcraft in the British Isles was only 300 years ago. And I think that it's important to note, like, there were studies done that were written up in Science Magazine in April of 2017 on roundworms, because their lifetimes are so short. They found that trauma impacts for 14 generations past the event. So in human years, that's 400 years. So actually, somebody being killed for being a witch, I mean, when you think of people fleeing Europe and coming here, and then the horrible things that were done to indigenous people and African people being brought in for being made slaves, and the denial about it all, here we're not that far past it. I mean, where I live in Fort Bragg, the first settlers arrived only 170 years ago. And that was about the time that the state of California was actually paying money for Indian scalps and encouraging the stealing of Indian children into slavery and condoning the massacres of whole villages to take land. So in terms of genetic memory, that was yesterday, and denial doesn't make it go away. So when we're, so I think there is terrible hurt in the past that has, you know, Frantz Fanon, Wretched of the Earth, he wrote about how once one is colonized, that sometimes the when one gets free of that, one colonizes other people. And I think that was quite an insight. But anyway, I wanted to speak to that because it's certainly up in this country right now, and I assume in Canada as well. But when we talk about reclaiming European indigenous roots, how far back would you do you think we're reaching to get back before all that? I mean, somebody pointed out to me that the Celts were accused by the Romans of doing human sacrifice. I mean, but we're not talking about, you're not talking about just totally assuming all the aspects of ancient Celtic culture, right? It's the land connection and spirituality.
Well, right, and some of us are quite lucky. We do know our exact heritage. You know, there's this myth that humans move around a lot, and I kind of disagree with that. I think that we tended to stay in certain places. We may have moved, you know, to another part of like a bioregion, but I don't think these great migrations. I know there were great migrations, but I kind of draw back on that a bit. I think that there are centuries and centuries that we did just stay in one place. Europeans were very bonded with the land, and the whole idea of this constant nomadic existence, certainly yes, but I do think there's also a component that we did stay in one place. So anyway, if you're one of those lucky people that can really trace your heritage to a homeland, or one or two homelands, and that kind of narrows it down in terms of finding the treasures in that heritage. And, you know, they were kept alive throughout the long years of colonization. There's many threads that we can pull on. And especially in this day and age with, like, all the resources we have through the internet, through vast library collections online, and, you know, all these scholars that have been really working nonstop in these areas of recovering all these mythologies. So yes, it isn't really that difficult to trace, you know, enough of a heritage to reconstruct it. And the reconstructionist movements are doing exactly that. So that's really exciting. That's the exciting part.
First, I need to pause and remind listeners that you're listening to Pivot Point on KZYX. I'm Christy Wagner. My guest is Peggy Ayers, who wrote Ancient Spirit Rising, a wonderful book. So I know I saw online that there's been a huge, I'm interested in Celtic because I'm lucky to have parents who got into genealogy. And also my brother treated me to an ancestry.com thing, and I'm pretty thoroughly Celtic. So I have a lot of resources because that in Ireland, and Scotland, there is that might be one of the European cultures that is still most lingering. But there's been a huge Celtic reclamation of roots, hasn't there, in general throughout the world?
Yes, it's huge, you know, in literature, in music, in culture. Yeah, it's a huge movement right now. That's really exciting. And sometimes these movements, though, they're not really going far enough in terms of undoing the colonial thinking that some people still are carrying and, you know, moving away from capitalism and so on. But yeah, the cultural movements, and it's very exciting. There's a lot going on.
So I noticed at the beginning of your book, you mentioned that your partner is a green man. I love that. What is a green man?
Well, he's an ancient figure out of our Celtic mythology. He shows up over and over. He's like a shapeshifter. I think one of our more recent manifestations would have been the whole story, the stories of Robin Hood, those story cycles. Wow. And the art that exists, like the carved stone, green men and green women all over the Celtic land. So it's a beautiful mythology, a little bit too much to get into for a radio show this short.
Right, but, right.
We do love the green man in this house and the green woman, I keep telling my husband.
Well, perhaps you could give us some examples of indigeneity from cultures worldwide.
Right. Well, that was a really exciting part of writing Ancient Spirit Rising, and not to sort of say that there is one global indigeneity, because that is certainly not the case. There's regional differences, and the diversity is extremely important. We can't glom together any culture. We need to support diversity. You know, our world of globalization and this push to make all these cultures homogenous, that is a really, really dangerous movement to happen. Because in the natural world, like without diversity, the whole ecosystem would collapse. And this is the same with human populations. So we need as much diversity as we can possibly maintain and then bring back. So that's another tie-in that we would be recovering our Celtic heritage, just to bring back as much diversity as possible. You know, gigantic nation states, that is not an ethnicity. That is not a culture. It's just a convenient political arrangement for, you know, the dominant powers. But it's bioregionalism is one way to go. And then, of course, tracing your own heritage, if possible. For some people, it's kind of hard. But anyway, yeah, so as I was researching my book, and I found all these beautiful indigenous knowledges all over the world, and there were, a lot of commonalities, and it became kind of clear that I could sort of put them together in one chapter. So that's what I did, because, not exactly, I don't want to be part of this, you know, homogenous idea, but I'll just read one. So, at the heart of the epistemology of all indigenous knowledge systems is the recognition that human beings need the water, plants, and animals to live, and that our water supply, our food forest, and the predator-prey relationship is essential to all life. This fundamental sacred dynamic is approached in an indigenous society or pre-colonial with great propriety, humility, gratitude, respect, protocol, care, and ceremony. So the ability to stay within natural limits and in a symbiotic relationship with the ecosystems of the planet represents the height of human intelligence and sophistication. And in my opinion, this is just my own opinion, there is absolutely nothing in the belief systems, achievements, or technologies of misguided human-centric Western civilization that even comes close to this preeminence. So that's a pretty bold statement to make, and I get a lot of blowback for saying that, but I'm going to stick to it. I truly believe that.
So I'm just thinking, I'm curious about, you also talk about various European indigenous traditions that I hadn't thought about before, like Norse. Could you say something about those European traditions that still are accessible? Oh, Peggy?
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Did I lose you?
Yes, I think that last part, it might have been my internet connection. I'm so sorry, but maybe you can repeat it. I'm not sure.
Oh, I was asking you about the Norse tradition, and I believe you had some other European traditions you mentioned in the book. Just to, give an example of varieties. Are you there? I might, Peggy? Well, we seem to have lost Peggy. Rich, can you help us? Okay, well, maybe we should go to our halfway break now. You're listening to Pivot Point on KZYX. I'm Christy Wagner. My guest is Peggy Ayers. We're coming up on the halfway mark, and we'll take a brief break to the music of Carolyn Hillier and Nigel Shaw of Dartmoor, England. When we come back, we'll talk more about ancestral mind and how to find it. Stay tuned.
We are come to this place from the wild woodshed. We are come from the hidden valleys. We have heard you call through the mist and the rain. We have felt your breath on the breeze. We have felt your breath on the breeze. Many days to the rhythm of your heart, like an echo of drum on stone. These voices are woven with the threads of your song. These people are returning home. These people are returning. We are wed to the body of the earth. We will draw our water from the rise of the stream. We are wed to the flow of the stream. We are wed to the flow of the stream. Of the stream. We will kindle our fire from the heart of the wood. We will open our feathers on the wind. We receive our living from the soil and the chase. We are wed to the soul of the land. We are wed to the soul of the Now the clans are gathered, the first press on, the first heart set on the ground. Our promise made, our union spun, to the spirit of this place we are bound. To the spirit of this place we are bound. The buzzard is risen, the deer is at bay, the wolf is returned to her lair. We embrace you close on the cold of the earth, we touch you soft in the air. We touch you soft in the air. We will dance many days to the rhythm of your heart, like an echo of drum on stone. Our voices are woven with the threads of your
soul. You're listening to Pivot Point on KZYX. I'm Christy Wagner. My guest is Peggy Ayers, author of Ancient Spirit Rising. We just heard the Heartstone Song by Carolyn Hillier and Nigel Shaw from Songs of the Forgotten People. Support for KZYX comes from our members and the Lighthouse Peddler. The Lighthouse Peddler is the monthly guide to life on the Mendocino Coast, plus original writing on books, wellness, ocean conservancy, and more. The latest issue now available at locations from Jenner to Elk, and the complete issues are online at thelighthousepeddler.com. And support for KZYX comes from Ivy Accounting and Payroll Services in Willits, specializing in bookkeeping and payroll services for local agriculture businesses and more. Serving all of Mendocino County, more information at ivyaccounting.com or 489-5486. Peggy, ancestral wisdom for the modern world as sourced from the land. How do we define this and where is it located? Are you there, Jenna?
Right. Yeah, I'm here. Sorry about that before. Yes. Yeah, looking to the land, it's what people have been doing throughout time. Always taking our cues from the natural world. So the land actually gives rise to culture, gives rise to our spiritual and cultural practices. Each culture, pre-colonial, would have origin stories, tribal myths, honoring of their ancestors, healing practitioners, oracle people, ceremonies, rituals, and the women's mysteries were deeply honored. Also, the day-to-day needs of the group, like the material culture, food, clothing, we now call that tech, which is traditional ecological knowledge, that was also sourced from centuries of connection to one particular place. So in our modern world, we don't have these deep connections, but there's certainly a process of becoming re-landed in the ecosystems in which we find ourselves or the bioregions. And there's kind of a set of processes we can go through, an inquiry who lived in the territory where we are, who were the original First Nations, what are the treaty agreements and relationships with that, are there any stories or legends from the local First Nations that always evokes the landscape for us? What are the wild creatures in the land? What is Earth community here? Becoming familiar with the animals, the birds, insects and so on, trees and plants. And I think a bioregion can be defined by like a 30-mile radius around where we're actually living. And I think in terms of post-civilizational studies or apocalypse studies, that's a very good guideline to know what is around you, where you're actually living, in case systems do break down to the point where we're dependent on our local ecosystems. And of course, Indigenous people are helping us. They're helping us with these processes too. There's many teachers in our own area that are more than willing to help anyone who comes for knowledge on this traditional ecological knowledge or tech.
You know, I'm noticing that many of the things that you're mentioning and other things that are mentioned in your book are coming up naturally here in Mendocino County. I've actually had an array of guests who have addressed some of these issues without referring to indigenous values. Like, what was one you had? Taking care of the soil.
Yes, exactly.
About relationships with plants, with the microbiome, etc. Localization and bioregions. These are all, yes, they're indigenous wisdom, and let's consciously be aware of that. Because, I mean, I appreciate that you are tying together that with things that are arising just for survival in this crisis time.
Exactly, like ancient practices, even from our own European past. So these are timeless ways of relating to the land, being interconnected with the land. I also love animism as a framework. I call myself a Celtic animist. So that's going to be my next book, by the way. I'm writing, it's going to be called The Animist Bible. So it's a bit of flipping the narrative on the actual Bible and turning it back to the animist people of the world.
Well, I love your description that animism, I have to confess I'm an animist myself.
Yeah.
I appreciate your description that animism seeks to relate and converse with land rather than define and control.
Exactly. So we're in a relationship. We're just one part of the whole. We're not above. We're not below. We're just right there in the middle with everybody else.
Right.
Humans. And I love how indigenous societies actually learn from the animals to the extent that they feel inferior. Inferior. I guess that's a good word. Or they're always learning from the animals. That's how the clan systems got set up. You know, you'd have the Martin clan, the Bear clan, the Wolf clan. It's because the animals have so much to teach us. I just observe my cat every day and I learn a lot. So we have to really stop thinking that the human way of being is the center of the universe, because other creatures hold just a most amazing knowledge, you know, to model to us as humans.
Yes, even gardens, even plants do. Like, yes. The amazing, like turning attention away from, you mentioned entertainment addictions and living each day as a sacred act. And I think, you know, for the first time in many years, I planted a garden this spring. I thought it might be a good idea with what was going on. But I've been just so dazzled by how giving nature is. These little seeds that I put in the dirt, I'm now eating wonderful vegetables that came of them. You know,
it's so incredible, that perennial principle of nature, endlessly giving, endlessly nurturing. Yeah. I kind of see a love at the heart of nature, too. That's why it breaks my heart so much when people just indiscriminately clear out a woodland or do like clear cutting, because the trees are just there to nurture everyone, all the rest of Earth community, you know, with oxygen, food, medicine, whatever. They're there to give to us, and we are here to love them and to protect them. So, the way the modern world is working is completely opposite to way the world should, you know, actually was set up for us as humans. We've completely reversed it into this position of dominance, which is the worst thing possible.
And you may know that we're in a redwood region. We have beautiful redwood trees. So we are in Mendocino County. There are many, many tree lovers. You know, I found even sometimes there are divides between people who, well, we used to have a logging industry here, but the people who made a living to support their families from logging loved the forest, loved the trees. And, of course, then there are the artists and the people who moved here just simply to be with the trees. And I think it's interesting, too, that the Celts revered the trees. And you have a chapter. Before I drop that, I want to say you have a chapter called Earth First, Earth Love. And, of course, literally we had an Earth First here in Mendocino County, but organization. But, so what were you going to say about trees?
Oh, I kind of knew about Earth First, but I thought, oh, maybe they won't mind if I like they have exclamation mark, Earth First, exclamation.
Yes. Yes.
So I didn't actually do that, but I thought, oh, maybe they won't mind. But I think Earth First is a pretty generic, can be a pretty generic expression. But the love of the trees is so integral to who we are as human beings. Like for millions of years, we've had that incredible bond. And I love in the Druid tradition, my heritage is Scots Gaelic through my mother's side. And then my father line is more like in England, which is the grand colonizer. But there's still beautiful threads of magic and Druidry and other earth connected lifeways in England, believe it or not. And so I feel a lot of the time my sense of protection from the trees comes from those ancient Druids that are still informing me. And they would punish people if they didn't have a reason for harming a tree. You would be in serious trouble. So I really like that about our ancestors. That's one beautiful part of who we are.
So one of the things that you point out in your book is the importance of rejecting empire. As I was reading about that, it came to me again. I mean, it's occurred to me before, but how they're really... this idea that one can straddle the consumer way of life and values with the deeper values, it kind of risks turning the deeper values into one more consumer purchase. I mean, superficial thing. And it seems that one has to actually make a choice. And commit to rejecting empire. It's part of supporting other humans and the non-human life. What do you think?
Yeah, I do think capitalism is sort of coming to its end point, and we've all benefited, you know, immensely. We've all been brainwashed to think all these products are for our benefit, and certainly medical care and a few other things like toilet paper and painkillers. You know, we've benefited from capitalism and civilization, but I think to go back to indigenous knowledge, it will mean an actual saying no in the future. You know, not to everything, of course, but we really have to move away from that paradigm. How can we move away from that paradigm and still, you know, continue with the economic paradigm that we're within? So these are a lot of issues, a lot of people struggling with them. There are so many thinkers and movements and activists working on this exact question right now. How do we shift away from capitalism? We really need to do that. My work in that is kind of the a neuro decolonization of the mind, sort of the habits we have since we are children living in the suburbs, and you know, the white is right society. So how do we kind of like unpack that, those habits of thinking and of acting in the world? And I focus a lot on that in the second part of the book.
I saw a reference in your book to ethno-autobiography, Unlearning Whiteness, and I had to
work that book. Yes.
It hasn't come yet. Unlearning Whiteness. Oh, I like that.
Fabulous. Like my all-time favorite book.
Oh, good. It should be here soon. Well, some of the things that I wrote down that you listed were simple things like go outside.
Yeah.
You know, the earth loves to feel dancing feet on her body. Revisioning reciprocity, prayers and gratitude rituals.
What else? Exactly. And we really can't, you know, have that bond in nature unless we actually spend time in nature. And that's the joy of it, that it happens sort of spontaneously. I mean, I know my whole life, if I've been in a bit of a down mood for whatever reason, I go out for a walk or I go to a park, even in an urban setting, and within, you know, 10 minutes, I'm feeling quite good again. So that is the whole world of eco-psychology, which is just an exploding genre right now. And just the benefits of nature connection is just incredible on every level, you know, physical, mental, spiritual, emotional. There are so many wonderful things happen for us when we go into nature. But we have to actually go there.
Yeah. And you, here's another one, sleep on the land. I have a dear friend who does that. She goes and sleeps outside all the time. And, you know, of course, she lives on 20 acres of redwoods. And it's absolutely gorgeous. These are simple things. They don't take money. It doesn't take money to go barefoot on the ground and be outside. So it just takes protecting.
Yes, and those electrons, you know, from the Earth's surface, we're just full of that Earth energy. That's another thing that Indigenous people are always like on the surface of the Earth, are either like sitting on the Earth, or they would sleep on the Earth, or squatting on the Earth, and never out of contact with Mother Earth. And they were super healthy, like the stereotype of this short, brutal lives of primitive people. That's an absolute nonsense. A lot of them lived to be 160 in the Lakota First Nation because they were so healthy.
Mm-hmm. Well, stutter. We are approaching the end of the show. So I mean, we still have a little bit of time, but I want to bring into our conversation, here's a quote from your book. In this time of transition, sharing and collaborating with our kindred spirits on the new Earth story is an integral part of reclaiming a collective worldview and practice. I love that. So you do that, writing your books. Do you? I once wrote a collaborative novel with three other women. What are some other examples of maybe oral storytelling, people coming together and sharing parts of the story? We used to call that hooping among my friends and my former students. where you just directly access, you just channel sort of whatever comes through, and you say your little part of the story about maybe a new Earth story or what the world could look like, and then the next person adds to it, and the next person adds. But I just wondered if you had in mind any particular group or style of collaborating on a new Earth story, or if you're simply saying, let's do this.
Yeah, I love the storytelling aspect because, you know, you can really reach a lot of people's hearts through stories. So people that otherwise might be very mainstream and they're not really getting it, but when they hear certain stories, that will start them going off in a new direction. So the power of storytelling is just, it's huge. And I actually designed an Oracle card set that is all about storytelling. I've been too busy, though, to kind of get it finished and get a publisher about one of these days. But you really reminded me of that, is sitting in a circle and the one person would carry on from what the person said before. So, yeah, connecting with community right now is extremely important. And kindred spirits, wherever you might find them. And of course, the tool now with the lockdown, the tool now is with like our internet webinars and connecting that way. So, you know, circles everywhere. We're moving forward in all these small and interconnected circles.
Yes. I want to remind listeners, this is Pivot Point on KZYX. I'm Christy Wagner, and I'm talking with Peggy Ayers, author of Ancient Spirit Rising, Reclaiming Your Roots and Restoring Earth Community. Peggy, what does peaceful coexistence mean to you? I think that's a good one to consider here. How do we build tolerance for diversity and respect for the other?
Yeah, I think that's really the only thing that's been missing throughout human history. Is being able to come together for common causes. I mean, we have to maintain that diversity, but there's no reason we have to, have all this fear and intolerance of other cultures. So I think that's the one sort of goal still for humanity is that tolerance for difference. Really, really important. Lifting up the sacredness and the interconnectivity of all life. And respecting all cultures and the beauty of all cultures. You know, just manifesting our visions of mutuality, the respectful relationship. Our ancestors, in many cases, had that ability. They would maintain their diverse ethnoculture and then come together in certain regions, maybe every couple of years, and you know, share tools or whatever it is they needed to share. So, I mean, human beings are capable of maintaining diversity at the same time as coming together in unity. And Chief Arvel Looking Horse, about 6 years ago, he came out with this amazing mantra. I don't know if mantra is the right word. It's a Buddhist word, but anyway. He came out with this perfect saying. I just did some cultural appropriation. Unity in diversity. So what a wonderful guideline.
Yes. I like that one too.
Mm-hmm.
And as you pointed out earlier, that's part of resilience. We've really reached a point where it's kind of like up against the wall. It's like all these things that for years we've sort of been referring to as positive things, but not embodying. It's like survival is looking like it's going to demand us to start embodying unity and diversity, etc. But yeah, man, exactly. All the awfulest parts have been coming out lately up from under the rock to be healed.
That's how I see it too. I think all these really toxic systemic inequalities are being uncovered more and more and more. So it's sort of rising to the surface, and then it has to be dealt with now by governments, institutions, businesses. It's like right in their face, because people of color and their allies, they're just not going to stand for that treatment any longer. Like, the time has come. It's just not going to be acceptable anymore to be racist.
And you know, it's bringing us back full center to, I mean, I have a quote here from your book where you are quoting Alice Walker, another of my favorites. And Alice wrote, to acknowledge our ancestors means we are aware that we did not make ourselves, that the line stretches all the way back, perhaps to the gods. We remember the ancestors because it is an easy thing to forget that we are not the first to suffer, rebel, fight, love, and die. The grace with which we embrace life, in spite of the pain and the sorrows, is always a measure of what has gone before.
That's so beautiful. And that's the kind of connection we have to recover as people of European descent, because we were so separated from our homelands and that connection to the ancestors. And in a lot of cases, we don't even value it anymore. So just to understand that most human societies throughout time have had a very strong connection to their own ancestors for very many good reasons. So we really need to get that back. It's something we really need to work on as white people. We're a standalone individual. That's what capitalism has done to us, right? We're all individual, the cult of the individual. You're out for yourself. And we have to get back the feel, the notions of ancestral connection and how important community is, and Earth community.
Yes, and you know, there's a spirituality to it all that's in, not from hierarchy, but from direct connection. And I think of how, you know, Native practices were, have been or still are by some ridiculed for their spirituality and their connection. I remember once having the opportunity to interview Edward Wemaitawa, who's a Zuni storyteller. And when I was interviewing him, he referred to the consciousness of rocks. And I was like, oh my God, I know rocks have consciousness, but I've never met anybody who said that before. And, you know, that kind of respect, or like Leslie Marmon Silko, you know, has written about rocks. She has a whole photo essay of the pictures of this rock at different times of day. And, you know, it's this kind of like earth love, where just being tuned in to the natural environment around us, our brothers and sisters, rocks, you know, it's a spiritual thing. And then that has been ridiculed as like superstition. But we have to let go some of those ideas that just steered us towards being consumers.
And the Christian overlay, too, that dictated what we thought of Earth community. So they've kind of demonized all of these beautiful connections. And that's what the connection with, or the way the rock is expressing. So that's animism again.
Yes.
And certainly rocks have a personality and they're communicating with us. It's just a little slower than some of the other creatures in Earth community.
I had a friend who would talk about migrating rocks. That everyone can see.
That is so fascinating. I love these old stories in the land, in the Celtic world, about the giants that moved around and they actually formed the hills that we see today. There's many, many stories of different giant beings that finally settled in one place and formed the landscape.
You know, that's true. And I know the Yurok people here in Northern California have a story of giants too, a time. In fact, there were white giants who were benevolent, and then that left the Yuroks, and then they left and were saying they were coming back, and then the Yurok people had their defenses down, if I understand the story correctly, when the settlers came in, because they had this oral tradition of this whiteness, although it was giants. It's just so great to know the old stories, even for someone who doesn't necessarily know their own ancestral heritage.
Because it opens the door. It like opens a portal to further learning, and it keeps that it keeps our hearts open to what's possible when you do live in an indigenous society, in an animist society. My book wouldn't have been possible to bring into the world unless I had spent a lot of time, you know, immersed in that indigenous mind, or that shift away from Western thinking. And it comes from spending a lot of time in nature, spending time with First Nations people, learning from them without appropriating, and So those are, you know, those are possible, and they're open to all people. Anyone can take on this work.
And your book is a great reference. I have to say, you are, as I've told you, you are, I find you to be an excellent translator between these two modes of mind. Maybe that's, maybe it's more than two, I don't know, but, but no, but it's a very informative book. It isn't like new age, fuzzy appropriation type stuff. It's very focused and clear, and it will be on my shelf as a reference going forward. Really appreciate that you wrote that book.
Thank you. Yeah. I'm really binary. I you know, people aren't supposed to be binary, but I just see like the Western world and the Indigenous world are so completely different that in my own mind there is a binary. So I do apologize for that.
No, no.
I have a chart, like I think it's on page 352. There's that modern thinking Western mind, ancestral thinking, Indigenous mind chart, and that was a lot of fun to put that together. I need to turn that into a slide, actually.
Well, that I think that sort of thing is really helpful to us all, making
yes.
transition. I notice it's already 9:56, so I have to move us along. Do you have upcoming events or contact information you want to share?
Well, thanks, Christy. I've just been kind of... My activities are a little bit less this summer. I was booked to do some festivals and conferences, but they've all been canceled because of the lockdown. So I'm doing a lot of work from home, planning for the future. I'm doing some new writing, and I have a blog. It's on my website at www.stonecirclepress.com.
And you have a great Facebook page for people who are on Facebook.
Oh, great. Yes, Ancient Spirit Rising, or like We Are Ancient Spirit Rising, I think is the other one.
Yes. Okay, well.
So grateful for social media. It connects so many of us kindred spirits together right now.
It is helpful for networking, very much so, among kindred spirits.
Yeah.
Well, I very much regret, but we are completely out of time. Peggy Ayers, it's been a pleasure talking with you. Thank you for joining us and for your book, Ancient Spirit Rising. Wishing you all the best, you and yours, all the best going forward.
Same to you, Christy. Stay safe, and thank you for the platform.
Yes. You stay safe, too.
Okay.
Next week, on July 15th, on Forthright Radio, UC Berkeley political science professor Paul Pearson discusses his work and latest book, Let Them Eat Tweets, How the Right Rules in an Age of Extreme Inequality, co-written with Yale University's Jacob Hacker. Their previous collaboration included Winner Take All Politics, host Joy LeClaire here on KZYX and Z. When Pivot Point returns on the fifth Wednesday of this month, July 29th, my guest will be Johnny Scott, a founding member of the Watts Writers Workshop. He grew up in Compton, attended Harvard and Stanford on full scholarship, and is a professor emeritus of Africana Studies at Cal State Northridge. We'll talk about the crisis of racism and where do we go from here. That's on Pivot Point, Wednesday, July 29th at 9 a.m. here on KZYX and Z. Before we close, I have an update on nonprofit Inner Pathways' celebration of beloved Albion wise woman Sunlight. As promised, 25% of June book sales, $200, has been donated to KZYX. Thank you, Inner Pathway, Belvie Rooks, and Fran Grace, and all who participated. Your gift is much appreciated. Listeners, if you want to make a donation to KZYX, please go to kzyx.org and click the red donate button, call our business office, or drop a check in the mail to P.O. Box 1 in Philo. Thank you. Thank you for listening. Thank you to Rich for engineering. Stay tuned for Interlude.
It's the little things. I remember when a bar fight.
Go Good morning. I'm Patrick Ohms, and you're listening to KZYX, Philo 90.7 FM, KZYZ, Willetton Ukiah 91.5 FM, and Fort Bragg at 88.1 FM. We are Mendocino County Public Broadcasting, member-supported community radio streaming on the web at kzyx.org.